Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My next guest is a stand-up comedian in Chicago. Dwayne Kennedy is on stage all this week at Zany's. Kennedy's been performing in Chicago for over 30 years. The comedian's been a mainstay at Zany's. He's toured all over the country, opening up for W. Kamau Bell and others. He worked with Bell on the FX show Totally Biased. Kennedy's been on all the late-night talk shows, but he's most known for being a comics comic, a veteran who helps young joke tellers hone their craft here in town before they make it in showbiz. Dwayne Kennedy's on stage through Friday at Zany's in Old Town, and he is my guest tonight on The Download. Dwayne, thanks for being here. Good to meet you.
Oh, Justin, thanks for having me, man. Sometimes when people read your credits back, they don't sound as...
I could have gone a lot deeper than that. That was very
cursory.
Yeah,
I was like, wait a minute.
I summed your life up in one...
Help some people go on to success. Well, what am I doing? You know?
Well, that's a good... I have a whole line of questioning about that. We'll get into that.
All
but,
right.
I mean, what's it mean to be back at Zany's for an extended run like this? You've played there so often, but but it's also the story that was in the Tribune today, and this was where you first got your start. Mm-hmm. The beginning of your comedy career was open mic nights at some point in the 80s.
That's what I did. Just started at Zany's. They had open mic nights, and I wanted to do comedy, you know? Say, well, let me give it a shot. I always loved it. So I went down there, signed up, went on. Actually, it went well the first time, which... It's good for me because, you know, I'm a natural quitter, you know. And so had it not gone well the first time, I don't know if I'd have done it again. But it went well enough that it made me try again. The second time at Zany's went kind of – see, I didn't know this. And people tell you the story a lot of times when comedians first start. A lot of times they'll give you 5 minutes for open mic.
Right.
But sometimes you're not aware. I wasn't, and I've heard this story from other comedians. I thought you had to have 5 new minutes every time you went up.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. You know what I mean? That first 5 minutes was barely comedy, you know.
You needed a Dwayne Kennedy to show you the ropes, right?
Right. I did, like I said, the first time I did it, had that 5 minutes. It was fine. Second time, new 5 minutes. It was, you know, muscle minnows. Then the third time, it wasn't happening.
And it said in the article that you took some time off after that.
Yeah,
you, like,
man.
Forget it.
Yeah, I was psychologically devastated. Yeah, so I didn't go up again for like about a year or so. I was damaged after that. I was damaged before that, but you know, yeah, that just heightened the damage. You know what I mean? It's like, man, if I can't do this, I am completely worthless.
Well, I got to ask you, because, you know, after that point, you took off as a comedian. You know, how much of the game is mental? To be in a position as a young comedian to get up there and to bomb and to not have success.
Yeah.
How much of getting in front of people as a stand-up comedian is a mental game?
All of it, man. All of it, because... You're up there by yourself. And it's funny, man, you see people, performers, and sometimes you think they have these outsized egos and all those things. And maybe that's true to some degree, but you almost have to have that to gird yourself against every, because it's like, in some ways, it's you against everybody.
Right.
You know what I mean? So you have to have that. So it's all mental, man, whatever you have to do to persist, you know. So you go through all kinds of gyrations. I mean, when I first started, whatever I told myself, I mean, I'm...
Psyched out, right?
Yeah, you know, you psych yourself up, and as you do it more and more, I think some of those things that, I won't call them tricks, but some of those ballasts that you use sort of fall away because now it's something that you do. But it's always a new thing to have to prepare for.
Getting back into the game, what was it that helped you conquer that mental edge, the idea that took a year off after it didn't go well, you're like, I'm out. What brought you back, and how did you deal with the mental ups and downs of performing?
Because I so loved comedy, and I was still compelled to do it. But even after that, man, I floundered a lot. I mean, I was constantly in and out. Even after that, I would do shows, and then I would stop, you know, just... A whole host of reasons, man. Mm-hmm. You know, a whole litany of self-sabotaging, I don't deserve this for whatever it is, or I'm not prepared for this, or ambivalence, I want it, yet I don't want it. In your mind, you think, man, if I could be the most famous person in the world, but in reality, I don't know if that would be that cool.
Because, and I want to get to the point about, you know, we kind of made the joke at the top about you being the one who helps the kids get to showbiz.
Yeah.
But a lot of that, I think, comes from the wisdom that you've had from your career to understand, even talking now. I mean, there are things that a lot of comedians going through who might be 19, 20, 21 years old, they think they're the only ones. I can't believe when it comes to self-sabotage or the idea that they may not think they're good enough or prepared. they need someone who's been through it, who's willing to give back. Because, as you said, this is a very solo entity. People are not looking out for other people when it comes to comedy.
It's a solitary pursuit. And I think maybe more so now with the younger generations, a spirit of they are more willing to help one another. It's more of a, seems to be more of a communal feel amongst the newer cats, but it's still a solitary pursuit, even in a community, because that's what it is. Stand up, you're by yourself. I would talk to people, you know, if they asked me something, I would tell them, but I never was that cat, like, you know,
let me put my arm around you.
Let me tell you something. You know, back in my day, where are you going?
Why do you think that guys like Kyle Kinane and Matt Bronger, they're both referenced in the article, and I believe Kyle was on, he talked about you at one point when he was on the show here. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that they do that? Why are these young guys who are coming up look to you and say, you really showed us how to do things and instill the kind of discipline and other things that you need in stand-up comedy? If you're not putting your arm around them, what are they seeing?
Man, Justin, that's a good question, Bob. Wish I had a good answer for you.
Hustle, maybe?
Yeah, well. Perhaps. Occasional. Maybe they see all the, you know what? The way Dwayne's doing it, I know you should not do it like that. Maybe I'm a walking cautionary tale. No, I don't know, man. This the pursuit of trying to get better at the art form. Maybe that. Yeah.
So, as opposed to just honing to get a sitcom deal or something like that, that you're looking at stand-up comedy as an art form, as a craft, and they're looking at you as an artist.
Yeah, perhaps that. Okay, I'll give myself that. I got to give myself something.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, I can't get on the show and just be all completely pathetic. I don't even know, Justin, why am I on this show?
Because you're at Zanies.
Oh, that's right.
Running through Friday here in Chicago at the Zanies in Old Town. Dwayne Kennedy in studio, longtime stand-up comedian here in town. We're talking
about
his
career.
You
should have said at first. Just a long time.
Yeah, not
he's
so
been
specific.
Doing stand-up about 70 years, ladies and gentlemen. he started with Pig Meat Markham. And
tell me about the circuit.
Skillet Jenkins and all of the other pork nicknamed comedians.
But at a certain point, don't you get more props out of the fact to say that you were doing stand-up in the 80s? That was the golden time.
Not for me.
No?
No. It was just the time.
It was just the time.
No, but, you know, I mean, it was cool. I know that's what they said. That's when the boom was, the 80s mm-hmm. and early 90s. People were getting paid. Again, that's what I hear. But, yeah, so it was fine. I mean, that's just what it was, when it was. Yeah.
Let's do this. Let's take a break. We'll come back more with Dwayne Kennedy tonight on The Download. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman in studio with me. Long time. Is that okay?
That's good.
Celebrated.
Yes.
Stand-up comedian Dwayne Kennedy.
Yeah.
He is on stage all week long at Zanies back in town, although you're a Chicagoan.
I'm a Chicagoan, so I'm mostly here unless there's gigs going on.
Right.
Actually, I'm going to Seattle next week to do a thing that Hari Kondabolu. You know Hari?
Yeah. He was on the show too. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, man. I love that cat. He's like my de facto manager. He says he set me up for this gig in Seattle. Like, you're coming out here and you're doing this gig.
All right, I'll do it. Well, you're on stage at Zanies in Old Town.
Oh yeah,
Friday.
I'm promoting the wrong show.
No, you're okay.
Yeah.
You mentioned about a younger generation. We also talked about the boom of stand up in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Are you able to by living through different decades and mm-hmm. generations and being a professional comedian?
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell the difference in generational comedy? Can you tell the difference of a crew that is considered a quote millennial or a crew that might be a Gen Xer? Do you see the way their comedy is? Can you tell the difference?
Yes, man, a little bit. Like, you know, just different sensibilities. People deal with topics differently. You cannot. Yeah, it just has to be approached a different way. Mm-hmm. It can't be ridiculed. Some things you just can't ridicule or just mock.
Which was at one point, that was the mainstay of comedy.
Right. Everything was, what's this? What's this thing I don't understand? That's pretty stupid, huh? That's stupid. What else is stupid? Everything is stupid. Everybody's stupid but me, right? Who's with me? So, which is cool. Then you just adapt and do it a different way.
Yeah. Can you tell that the art form has evolved? Or mm-hmm. is a newer generation, a 19-year-old stand-up who's coming through right now, are they approaching the craft of stand-up differently? Are they telling jokes in different ways? Because there's so much more exposure to different kinds of comedy because of the internet and other stand-ups. Are they shunning the sort of idea of getting up there with a microphone and doing their 5-minute set that they've known and trying new things in a mainstream stand-up world?
I mean, I go to some of the independent rooms, but not a lot, man. So that's when I see the millennials. It's like, oh, man, and they're good. You know, it's like, oh, boy, you know, I got to wait a minute. I've just been at the crib. I need to, you know. I think comedy is comedy as far as the structure. I mean, how you craft a joke.
Right, right.
But it's just the topics and the sensibilities and the way in might be different.
I mean, we've seen a lot in the last just 2 years where stand-up comedians who have made their name in the clubs or even on television mm-hmm. have said, I'm not playing colleges anymore. I'm not doing this. The sensibility has changed in the club. You can't make the same jokes. We saw the big hubbub at Second City where they were having trouble with the audiences and interacting with the audiences. Mm-hmm. For you, who's been doing this for a while, do you see a change in the way that the audience is approaching stand-up comedy and what jokes you can and can't get away with?
That's true, man, but I think... Now, again, with those independent millennial shows, they've honed a certain type of millennial audience that are attuned to certain things and will tolerate and not tolerate certain things. But maybe a more traditional comedy club like Zany's, they're more, you know, I don't say old school, but, you know, you could probably get away with being a little harsher or a little less yeah. reverent or a little less attuned, or they're not as easily microaggressed, you know.
Right. So there's a difference between playing a Zany's and playing, say, a Lincoln Lodge or one of the other places. The Zany's is still a traditional comedy house, and with that comes a traditional sentiment that goes with a stand-up show.
Yeah, definitely, man, because even with me, there's bits that I did a couple of years ago that I couldn't do the same way now because the sensibility has changed just that much in 2 years.
Wow.
You know, like talking about Caitlyn Jenner, and I had stuff about that. Even just, whenever it happened, what was that, a couple years ago?
Yeah, they really kind of. 2 years ago.
Yeah, and I was doing a bit about it that now, man, some of it I could do. Some of it's like, oh, I probably have to reword that because that comes off as a bit not progressive.
We've always heard that. Like, if you go back and watch a stand-up set from the 60s or 70s, you'll see a lot of stuff that is not tolerated, right?
Super sexist, super racist, super
and it
everything.
Seems to be now it's accelerating. As you mentioned, like 2 years you could do a joke, and then 2 years later it's out of fashion, out of it. I'm just fascinated with the world of a stand-up comedian. Is your job is to tell jokes about what's happening around us. Mm-hmm. But when what's happening around us won't tolerate those jokes, does it change your approach to the craft?
That's a great question, man. And I think it does, for better and for worse. Because sometimes you need to be able to speak freely, at least that, and then let the audience, I guess, pick and choose what it is that they'll accept. But at least be able to try everything. So I'm not trying to condemn or castigate all audiences, but sometimes audience can be just a bit, I don't want to say hypersensitive, but maybe sometimes it just seems like, man, you know, you can't even, you're even cognizant of what it is you're going to say before you say it, and then you might limit and edit yourself. So it just, I think it diminishes you to some degree. And I'm not saying you should be free to just say every ridiculous, offensive thing, you know, ultimately, but at least be able to feel free that you can try some things,
right.
You know. So I think then you start to police yourself. And then things start to diminish. Now, the less people hear as far as what offends their sensibilities, and then they get coddled in some way, now the less they'll tolerate in some ways. You know, it's almost like a progressive fascism.
Yeah. That's really what I think a lot of people who are listening right now would call it. I mean, you get to a certain point where the people who are calling it out are now being questioned for why they're calling it out, and you get into this strange cyclical thing that's happening in this country or just in comedy where you don't know what's right and what's wrong. Dwayne Kennedy's in studio, longtime stand-up comedian here in Chicago. He's at Zany's through Friday. He's got a week-long run at Zany's in Old Town. Chicago has been a kind of a microcosm for comedy, for stand-up comedy scenes. Mm-hmm. You think about Chicago. You've got, like you mentioned, the traditional Zany's, which has played a major player on the national scene, mm-hmm. bringing in headliners, you know, a lot of the sitcom stars, people like that. Mm-hmm. You've got an independent scene that is also doing the same thing, that people are moving on to Hollywood from the independent scene. They're skipping the Zany stage altogether.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then and what I think gets missed entirely is a black comedy scene here mm-hmm. that is influential beyond measure. The Jokes and Notes and other places, they have...
And before that, All Jokes Aside.
All Jokes Aside, I mean, you think about Bernie Mac, of course.
Yeah.
You think about, even now, Lil Rel comes out of that. But they're competing...
Corey Holcomb, all those cats.
There are... seems to be, even though stand-up is one thing in Chicago, there seems to be competing scenes.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. It's just because you know one city is still different sensibilities depending on where you're at and depending on who it is that's doing it. So yeah, so there's a lot of scenes within the scene within the city. Yeah, which is great.
When I think about those scenes, and there's probably more. I'm not just three that you just mm-hmm. mentioned, but
there's the scene that I do just in my room.
That's right.
That scene.
Yeah,
it's just me and the wall.
It's a dramedy.
Yeah.
Can they coexist? Those scenes. Can they share? Can they feed off each other? Can they become a united Chicago that gives us more of a presence when it comes to comedy in this country?
It used to be, just before they closed, like with Jokes and Notes, there was some white folks going down there doing Jokes mm-hmm. and Notes, as there were, you know, not black comics, but they would do primarily like the black circuit or the black scene, who would, you know, come up and do the Northside rooms,
yeah, right.
which is like code for the white rooms.
Right.
You know?
I just think about it that it would be great if all those scenes were able to share each other's stages and play off each other and mm-hmm. have more exposure for all the scenes for the coasts.
Yeah, man. Well, that's a whole – I think that has less to do with Chicago and more to do with whether the people on the coast are just willing to come here and see talent, because that's the whole thing. I mean, Chicago – I always tell people that Chicago is a great place to get good. It's not a place to get famous. But that has more to do with just the East Coast, West Coast.
Because they're not coming here.
Right. They're not coming here regularly to scout talent. Like I said, so it doesn't matter where the talent is. If somebody's coming here to scout it, they'd make it a point, to, if they were thorough about their job, to find the places and ask people and go to where the talent is. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? There doesn't have to be like, let me go to that one club where they show every comedian in Chicago.
There's no such thing.
So I think the onus is more on them than it is on people from Chicago. What can people from Chicago do? You know, hey, come here and watch us.
I get asked this a lot. I've done comedy in my life, but I didn't leave Chicago. I like Chicago. Why stay here? Why not be living in Los Angeles where the industry's at for stand-up, or in New York trying to get on talk shows?
Periodically, I have lived in those places. I've done that. I've gone out there, both L.A. and New York, and been out there for periods of time. My very first time doing national television, I did Showtime at the Apollo. I went out there, did it, came back here, and wound up in L.A. as a result of that Showtime at the Apollo tape. Mark Hirschfeld. You ever heard of him?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a big casting. But at the time, he cast a show called 227.
Classic.
So I did Showtime at the Apollo. This was 88. Did a show. So I came back here. A friend of mine in New York, Jetta Jones, comedian, goes out to L.A. to just go up and do sets. And somehow she gets my tape to this cat named Topper Carew, who at the time was a huge talent manager and one of the few black people managing talent. He managed Martin Lawrence and everybody. I had actually read about him in Ebony, you know. So she gives him my tape. He gets the tape. He gives it to Mark Hirschfeld. Mark Hirschfeld calls me. Hey, man, my name's Mark Hirschfeld. I'm in town. We're casting this show 227, which had already been on the air for some time, but they were adding new characters. Would you like to come out and audition for this show? Okay, fine. You know, all right. He sends me to say, we're going to send you what they call sides. I didn't know what that was. And we just like to send you the sides, and we want you to just tape this scene. So he sent me the sides. I knew a cat with a video camera, this cat named Mark, go over to his crib. We shoot the scene, tape it, send it back to him. Hey, we like this. We'd like you to come out and audition for the role. So at that point, winds up, Topper talks to me. He and his wife, Alice, were a management partnership, you know, wife, husband and wife. So they wind up being my managers. Now, mind you, I have never been west of Iowa. All this happened while I'm in Chicago. He calls me from L.A., tells me what's going on. He becomes my manager. At this point, I'm scheduled to fly out to audition for the show. Topper puts me in touch with this cat, Mike Eisenstadt, who's an agent. Mike calls me. It's a conference call. Okay, I'm going to represent you. So now Mike is representing me, because they sign you to what they call, right. Before you audition, I forget the name of this term. Do you know this?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Like, it's if you get the gig, you're rep by these people. Yeah, I don't.
Yeah, yeah. So
called.
You're already signed in. Yeah. Pay, play, something, whatever it is. So anyway, Mike is negotiating on my. So now I have a manager and an agent.
All like that.
Yeah, and I'm still in Chi-Town.
Did you get on 227?
So, fly out there, man. And meet Mark Hirschfeld, real cool cat. And so it's me and like 12 other cats, you know what I mean? And he coaches me through the thing, you know, because he really wants you to get it, you know. Yeah. So I do the reading. So now I get a call back. So now it's me and like 6 other cats. One of those cats being Orlando Jones.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I do that reading, get another call back. Now just me and some other, I think it was just me and Orlando. I don't know. So now society. It's just me to read. But what it was this was, do you ever remember this cat named Barry Sobel?
Yeah.
Barry Sobel.
Yeah,
he's a comedian.
Yeah.
And he was on 227. He was playing Stoney Jackson. Do you remember him? Anyway, Barry Sobel was on the show. Stoney Jackson was playing his roommate. They were adding Stoney Jackson. But they didn't like Stoney in the part, even though they had cast him. So they were looking to recast him behind his back.
Yeah. Ooh.
Yeah. So I was the person. So now they bring Stoney back in to reread for the part that he had already gotten.
Ooh.
Yeah, man.
He couldn't have been happy, right?
No, he was not. And finally, they still couldn't decide, and it was just during the hiatus. They find Barry Sobel. He's on vacation. They fly him in so he can read with us so they can gauge the chemistry. So I read. I go over to NBC at Burbank because it's for Sony Productions, whatever, Columbia, whatever it is. Yeah, Columbia. So we both read, come out the audition, and Stoney just leaves. I mean, he like glaring at me like, yeah, I didn't do it. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
They just called me, brother. I'm, you know. And so they come out and they tell him, say, look, half the room like Stoney, half the room like Dwayne. Well, so since it wasn't unanimous, we're going to keep Stoney, but we're going to give Dwayne, we'd like to offer him a holding deal. So I got a holding deal out of it, and I wound up doing a guest spot on 227.
We should just have you back and just tell Hollywood stories.
Yeah, man, I got
Hollywood,
a few.
Hollywood stories with Dwayne Kennedy. Dwayne Kennedy is at Zany's this week through Friday, the longtime stand-up comedian here in Chicago.
Yeah, long time.
Mainstay. And see, that's... Yeah, distinguished.
That's cool. Yeah,
doesn't say how many years.
Yeah, yeah. That's old without being old. Yeah, that's a long time.
It's at Zany's in Old Town through Friday. Dwayne, great to meet you. Thanks for being
a guest.
You too,
man. Hey, thanks for having me.